Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sago, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files, and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is Bluewater coming to you from Booger County and the mysterious Ozarks and Mid-America. This is the show for Saturday, the 18th of September, 2004. And our guest once again this week is the Dr. Robert Ghostwolf. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting things. You know, here lately there's been a lot of concern about the sun and coronal mass ejections, and there's even been some talk on the internet about people noticing strange things about the moon. And there's certainly, you know, I myself personally last year found out that that's how I met Robert, was I figured out was that the Hopi prophecy about a star that would be discovered when there was a bright comet in the sky at a certain period, number of years after a certain thing happened. Anyway, so it's very clear that there are signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. And people that believe in Jesus believe that that is a roadmap that will lead to the coming again of their Messiah. So these are interesting times, and go ahead and say hi, Dr. Ghost Wolf, and tell the folks.
Hi, Dr. Ghost Wolf.
Yeah, we got a bad moon rising here, you know.
Oh yeah, well, the kettle is boiling, as they say.
Well, you were telling me about this scientist at Sandia Labs that had discovered some really interesting things.
Well, what happened was we went and we talked to this fellow whose father is a scientist up there at Sandia. And we said, you know, we're getting all these letters and all these, you know, reports coming in about, you know, the moon's changing its orbit, it's upside down, it's revolving the other way. And he is one of those total scientific skeptics.
Yeah, I mean, he's an empiricist.
And he says, well, you know, this is hogwash. But it started to go on, and anyway, the son went over there for the Sunday family outing, whatever they do on Sunday, they all get together, and he was bringing it up, and the mother was getting all upset and everything else, and so the father said, well, I'm going to go check into this. And 2 days later, he came back and said, well, there are some strange things going on. I don't know about it going upside down, but it seems that it's revolving the other way, and I don't know exactly what that means. He's yet to get back to me on it, but I mean, there's all these incredible stories that I mean, I get like hundreds of emails.
Well, just so people understand, the Earth rotates as it revolves around the sun, and at least as far back as anybody remembered, the moon...
Since we had one moon.
Yeah, right, since we had one moon. The moon has rotated at the same rate that it has revolved, so that's why it always shows the same face toward us. And if any of that changed, then, it would certainly make some people nervous. And I know here a couple months ago there was people that were emailing me and asking me, well, what's going on? And I went outside and looked, and, well, it looks like the moon to me, you know. Here I am, another guy willing to talk about any possibility about prophecy, and I kind of looked at it and went, this is some people that, you know, aren't used to... See, I'm 49, I'll soon be 50, and I was an astronomer from the time I was 12, an amateur astronomer. And I had a lot of telescopes.
Can you say that 10 times?
Yeah, really. I've even done astrophotography when I was a kid. So I'm comfortable with the constellations and knowing how they look. But anything's possible. So anyway, tell us some more.
Well, when these things start going on, you know, it's you're getting responses and letters and comments from people all over the country. You start paying attention after you read your 25th one.
Yeah, right.
And you know, there are prophecies that talk about prophecies and legend. Now, when I say prophecies and legend, I mean prophecies tell us, you know, this happened, beware, this will happen again.
Right.
Or this will happen in a future time.
Right.
Where they're all overlaid with legend, because legend tells us what happened.
Right.
So legends is more or less the historical accountings of things that happened. And I've heard both from the Mayan and the Hopi that, you know, the sun was sick. Our sun was sick. Something happened to the sun, and that was part of the reason why the old ones had to go underground, because the sun, whatever happened to the sun, it went out of kilter, and it something happened to it. Stories range from a giant meteor hit it to a mothership went in and did something there. But whatever it was, the sun changed, and the rays of the sun, which once gave us very long lifetimes, if we go back to biblical times and ancient history, and even if we go into Mayan history, like Quetzalcoatl, I mean, he lived a very long time. So did the people in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
When you go back to Abraham and whatnot, Abraham was, what, 600 years old?
Before, they were living 980, you know, almost 1,000 years.
Right. Now, all of a sudden, something goes cattywampus with the sun, and so the old ones, the Anunnaki, go under the ground because it's detrimental and it's shortening their lifespans.
Right.
Now what's going on with the sun is that you can't go out there because of the ozone layers and the manipulations in the atmosphere. Like here in New Mexico and Arizona, people very quickly can get sun poisoning and skin cancer.
School children in Australia for years have been required to wear hats, and you know they've Ed Dames has been on with Art Bell talking about the kill shot, and I mean there's lots of things that could happen. That sun, you know, we're in a very narrow set of circumstances here, and you know if things but out of balance, you know, some strange things can happen.
Well, and besides the sun, we have the legends and the prophecies about the moon. And it all goes back wherever you go. It doesn't matter which continent, but the ancient cultures talk about two moons, okay? The Earth had two moons. And one of those moons, for whatever reason, probably a tail at a Star Trek or something. Anyway, one of the moons disappeared, and they believe that that's now one of the moons by Jupiter.
Uh-huh.
And then the other story is that, you know, that moon is what crashed into the Earth, and when it crashed into the Earth, it crashed into the area that is today the Gulf of Mexico, and that's why all those cities are buried below there.
Yeah.
You know, how much of those legends are actual accountings, we haven't verified yet. It's a little difficult. We have discovered the cities that they talked about in the Gulf of Mexico under the water, sometimes as deep as a mile down, off the coast of Yucatan, and as well off the coast of Cuba and off the coast of Brazil. And then, of course, In the Bahamas, you know, off Bimini Island.
Bimini Road.
The Bimini Road. And so we know that there was once folks that were up here dancing in the sun, and now everything that's left to tell their story is thousands of fathoms below the ocean.
Yeah.
So whatever that was, it must have been incredible.
People don't understand the Earth's crust rides on bubbles of magma. And, you know, apparently the western United States has been up and down several times above water and below water because the Decalogue stone near Laguna, New Mexico, you know, that's the Ten Commandments written in Phoenician. And apparently from other artifacts that were found, they figured that may have been a Phoenician port. That's a long way inland to be a port, but... But see, this is what Gordon Michael Scallion and a bunch of other people are saying.
Well, a lot of New Mexico is under ocean.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the water here is alkaline and it's saline.
Yeah.
It's what's left of what they call salt lakes, and salt lakes were left of what was the oceans when the oceans receded.
Lake Bonneville.
Mm-hmm. Well, even when you go out to places like Estancia, which is... about 40 miles east of Albuquerque, and you go out there, it's very hard to grow things. They can grow hay and things.
Yeah.
But the soil is so salty. I mean, you know, I think the only thing you can grow out there is pretzels.
Well, I know in Laguna, where John Red Hat lived there, they couldn't drink the water. It was so bad. I mean, you put it on plants, it'd kill them.
Yeah. And they had alkaline, saline salt water. And when you travel through a lot of the higher up places, like if you go to Payson, Arizona, and you look at the tops of the hills there, I don't call those mountains, but I live in the Rockies, so they're not mountains, they're just hills. But when you go to the top of the hills, there's all sorts of fossils that show trilobites and snails, okay?
Yeah.
All sorts of shell, and this is the higher up area, so and what you see is that right next to that, there's an area where it goes all the way down, And so the upheavals here were, pretty amazing.
Well, Albuquerque's 8,000 feet. And
no, four. Albuquerque's four.
Four, yeah. No, four?
Albuquerque's four. Where I am is about 6,500.
Okay, I thought they were saying the other day that Albuquerque was higher. I didn't think so.
No, it's about 4,000 feet. I'm up in the Santa Fe
Mountains.
I go up to Santa Fe, you're about, from 5,500 to 6,000 feet.
Yeah, they were saying that. But see, Laguna, 25 miles west of Albuquerque, so it's around 5,000 feet up there.
Yeah.
And, that's an old port, a Phoenician port, there've been a lot of earth changes, and probably hasn't been that long. That's only 4,000 or 5,000 years, folks, that the Phoenicians were in there. In boats.
Yeah, they were here. So were the Hebrews.
Yeah. Well, there were Tribe of Benjamin writings found on a wall in the identical to the ones in the Negev Desert that were found in a wall in the Colorado River Valley. And you can read about that at viewzone.com. There's all kinds of interesting things that have been found. And people call them anomalies, but they're just they're all that stuff that's fringy, that doesn't fit the model. And
we're coming out of a very naive age of archaeology last century. Where they gave everything names that didn't necessarily have anything to do with anything that was.
Yeah.
Everything became Anasazi, and Anasazi doesn't mean anything. I mean, you can go around and, shake your prayer rattles and light your fires and do your pipes and do everything and call for the Anunnaki, Anasazi, and the Anasazi won't come because there were no Anasazi. Anasazi simply means the old ones, okay? This is an Anasazi ruin. What does that mean? But when you look at the architecture tells you a very different story. Because the architecture, architecture is like a blueprint, and it's like a forensic imprint, and it says, this is the same kind of stonework that they did in Ireland.
Yeah.
So what is it doing here?
Huh.
This is the way they cut stone and cut arches over there. And when you go to the ruins over there, it's the identical way they laid the archways going into the entrances, ingress and egress in and out of these caves and dwellings. And it's the same thing here.
And why are there red-headed giants buried in these Anasazi?
you can believe everything that you read, or you just start believing what you see. And what you see usually turns things around to the point that you can't explain it, so you have to go find something else out. Something else has got to tell the story here. Going on to the moon, one of the things that I found was curious when I was trying to figure out why in the world would certain religious organizations be so down to the point of violence and tyranny and everything else to stop people from coming out with stories about archaeological finds in certain areas of the Southwest. And one of the things that I found at almost every major location where, in those days, it appears that there are places of learning up on the surface world were not these temples like we think of in Greece and Rome. They were these outdoor places. And usually there was a creek or some substantial water source nearby. And it's hard for people to tell today because, if you drive through portions of western Colorado or eastern Utah, northeastern Utah, it's all desert, right? But we have to remember that even, 500 years ago, if I told people it was as close as 100 years ago, they would hardly ever believe that, but it's the truth. They used to have a lot of grasslands and creeks and things all over the place. The buffalo went down there. Now, buffalo aren't going to graze on sand and sage.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo graze on grass.
Well, northern Arizona. It's only been in the last 100 years that all that grazing. You go down to Pipe Spring National Monument and out of Kanab, and you learn the story. It looks like a wasteland out there now, but that was all flowing grass. And before they brought cattle in and mismanaged it.
Well, now it's all desert.
Yeah.
And that's how fast it all happened, which is the shock, I mean, we lived here for 35,000 years and everything was in balance, and all of a sudden in less than 150 years, everything went the opposite way, and where was once rich grasslands and places where people could grow crops turned into wastelands and desert. And, you know, some of these are due to natural causes. We know that there were tremendous droughts out here in the West 1,200 years ago, and that's part of what caused the migrations of the Pueblo people, because they didn't have enough water, you know. I mean, you go up to places like Mandalay up here, and they had, like, you know, they had 150,000 people up there.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
And then all of a sudden there was no water.
Wow.
So people had to migrate to where the water was.
And fast.
And I think that that's what started a lot of the, in the Southwest anyway, that's what started a lot of the nomadic habits of the people. Because in my studies of the Apache, I had to come to terms with myself when I realized that the Apache were not indigenous to this area. The Apaches, in fact, came from Canada, okay? They migrated south, and when you come up to the Yucaria Mountains here, north of Santa Fe, by Taos, sort of west of Taos, that's where they settled mostly, and they were mountain farmers. When we hear the word Apache, we think of, you know, red cliffs and granite rocks and Geronimo running around the Mexico desert. Well, they just went to those places because they figured the white men wouldn't follow them there because they'd have to be crazy.
Do you remember what language group they are? I was thinking Utah Aztecan.
It's a Utah language. I don't know about Azteca. They might have picked that up later.
Yeah,
because they lived down this area, they picked it up because they intermingled with the Zapotec people.
Well, languages change.
You know, their language is different. Chiricahua is very different than Mescalero.
Yeah, it's like the ethnologists think that Cherokees are related to the Iroquois, but you know, our people remember that we fought a war with those people. And. And to stop the war, we agreed to stop speaking our language and start speaking theirs. So, you know, so language has changed.
Well, the language has changed considerably. And a lot of that happened in the 500 years before the invaders came here.
Yeah.
I say invaders because it was the way they came in, not that they came in, because everyone's been here. Everyone. Chinese have been here. Africans have been here. Celts have been here. Phoenicians have been here. Romans have been here. Egyptians have been here.
Yeah.
The truth of America is an amazing story. But all of those cultures were matriarchal. The patriarchal thing happened later. The patriarchal society of the Azteca happened later. Like if you look at the Maya and the Inca and you look at the Azteca, well, the Maya and the Inca were basically matriarchal. And then the Azteca come in, they're patriarchal. What goes along with the patriarchal society, and this all goes into the moon, is war.
Yeah.
Okay? Everything is expressed through war. Conquest is expressed through war. Expansion, the getting of knowledge, how the economy works, how we support our cities is all based on war, the taking of slaves, the taking of territories. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that the Aztec society in itself, in brief, is an amazing story because the whole story of the Aztec, the entire story of the Aztec, happens over 200 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they come up from these wandering guys who were, you know, basically like the Hebrews, wandering around a desert going, where's my home, to living with the Toltec tribes. The Toltec tribes then go into decadence and degeneration, and all of a sudden out of that, the Aztec come up and they make all these alliances and they have this literal revolution and they take over the Toltec cities and then they become the Aztec Empire. And by the time Cortez got here in 1526, what we have to realize is that everything that he saw, all these incredible buildings, all these incredible cities, they were all built within 100 years. That is amazing. I mean, it is amazing. Even the Egyptians weren't that fast.
Yeah.
I mean, the Romans had concrete, and they couldn't pour it that fast. These guys took everything out of limestone and carved these incredible things. I mean, in just a very short period of time. And they spanned thousands of miles and took in hundreds of different tribes, all within a very short period of time. And then by the time that it was all over and the Spanish, you know, burned the temples and brought them down, the Aztec had gone in 200 years from a wandering tribe to a very high civilization to complete decadence and blood sacrifice. And when the Spanish came here and saw the blood sacrifice, which is basically being done to appease the gods to keep the Spanish out because they were scared to death of the Spanish once they realized the Spanish weren't really gods, there was something wrong with this story. And like Cortez walked into Mexico City, what is today Mexico City, and the temple's steps were like literally red with blood. I mean, they were crimson with blood.
Well, they've proved now that I saw a History Channel thing the other day, and they've proved that the written stories about them making a sacrifice of like 2,000 guys in a 2-3 day period, it was completely possible.
That was just before Cortez walked into that city.
Uh-huh. And it was completely possible because of using the obsidian that they had. They had sharp enough knives that they could make an incision underneath the sternum and just reach up in there and literally...
Well, they had these obsidian knives that were like half-moon shaped.
Right, and just...
And they just, boom, scoop, gone.
It actually probably took more time to switch victims and get him to settle down than it took 45 seconds to cut the heart out, they figured. Because they actually made up dummies with plastic and simulated all this stuff and had a surgeon do it. And they proved it could be done.
But we have to remember that didn't happen to the very end. When they showed that there was no hope and that they didn't know how to stop the Spanish.
Yeah.
They didn't know how to fight these cannons and things. They didn't know what they were. They had a technology of their own, but the Spanish never took the time to learn what that was. They just got rid of it, and they had their own stories and everything else. But the Aztec were a composite people that took their religion from everybody else and integrated it with their own, which is also very unusual.
Yeah.
So it appears that they either came down with a very strong belief. When I say came down, I mean came down from the North Country. And the North Country would be somewhere, from what I can estimate, I know that there are stories that say it's all in California, but it wasn't in California, except in the Four Corners area.
Yeah.
That's where the giant cities are. There are cities up there the size of the cities in Babylon.
Oh.
but that, you know, they don't look at them. They don't realize that they're cities because they look at it, oh, look, it's a mountain. But if you look at it, it's not a mountain. It's like when you go down to South America and you're standing on a hill and the Mayan elder tells you you're standing on a pyramid.
Well, isn't it interesting that a civilization of white people that basically formed itself out of the religions of a whole lot of other people about 300 years after the death of Jesus went in and did that and destroyed another group that did the same thing, but an eclectic religious group, because that's how they got their power, was by absorbing, you know, they had to make certain gestures to the people in Britain, so, you know, they let them keep little things and little this and that, and that's how they became so large, is they let people keep bits and pieces of their liturgies and
When they didn't do that, when they tried to impose a specific way, they usually fell apart very fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, keeping on track with matriarchy and patriarchy, what I found at many of these sites, these temples of learning, which were outside, and at least cliff, petroglyphs are there, and you realize after a while that they're not just rock art, they're actually language.
All these rock observatories, right?
And, yeah, and they were places of learning, and what they did was they simply put up, just like we do on the monument on top of the Supreme Court, you know, these are our heroes, this is what we believe in, this is our faith in God, and we believe in justice. And they did the same kind of things talking about their beliefs and where they came from. So all this history is down there. It's written, as a matter of fact, we can say it is written in stone, so that's the way it was. In biblical terms, it wasn't written in stone until it was absolute, and then it was considered law. And so this stuff is all written in stone. I mean, the migrations from here, the great ships that came here, they're all talking about this goddess. They're all talking about the mother goddess. And then all of a sudden it started clicking in my head that, wait a minute, this is why you're so afraid of this stuff coming out, because it is acknowledgement of the feminine. It is acknowledgement of the goddess, because everywhere you look and there are these figures of the goddess, the same goddess that was in Europe, the same goddess that was in Babylon, the same god. It's the goddess, okay?
Well, I heard a lot of Native people say, "Well, we don't have anything to do with Europe. They've got that mother goddess thing, and we never had that." Well, I'm here to tell you, the Cherokees had the same thing as the Hebrew did. The woman with the moon at her feet and the crown of stars above her head.
I have seen at least 150 undisputable depictions of what could be called the goddess Tammuz. And the goddess Tammuz is the reptilian goddess of Babylon, okay? The mother goddess. And they are all over the Southwest. I am sorry if that upsets people.
Well,
but that's the way it is. Go out there and look and research what it is, and you'll find out what it is. Now, that would be very upsetting to a present-day patriarchal religious organization, talking about the balance of male and female. I mean, but when we get into the stories about what the ancient Americans were about, I mean, they were into fertility rites. The women blessed the field and the crops with their menstrual blood. They painted the menstrual blood on the face of the warriors before they went out to fight to give them strength and courage. This is all in Native American history and lore. And from South America all the way up to Canada, they were much more warlike up here, as far as we think. The difference meaning that if you go down to the Mayans, you go down to Toltecs, you go down to Incas, they had mass army. The Toltecs controlled an area from Peru, that we know, all the way up into the Ohios and Canada. That's how big their area was. When you go up into the Serpent Mounds and you go into the highways that are up there, they're made out of the stones, the same way they built them down in the Yucatan. This is all Toltec. It is amazing that these people's empire was that big, that vast. How did they communicate? But they did. And we don't use terms here, if you're using Native American language, as the goddess, but who can deny she who watches?
Yeah.
She who watches are the double spirals. These are the same double spirals that appear in Ireland and Scotland. It is Celt. It goes back to the Picts. It goes back that far. The same spirals, the same marks, the same glyphs, which are a form of script. The same things exist there that exist here. When I showed these things to people in the British Museum and Sir Lawrence Gardner, they were thrown back because they said to me, quote unquote, well, Lawrence said to me in a letter, quote unquote, "My God, where did you get these, Robert? I thought I knew all the sites up there in Ireland and Scotland." I said, "Well, they didn't come from Ireland and Scotland, mate. They came from Colorado."
Now, these spirals, do they go in opposite
directions?
They do.
Yeah.
Well, that
also makes a figure eight. And the figure eight is the infinity symbol. The Celts called it Latine. It was the place of the beginning and the place of the end. It was the place where you entered this world and where you left this world. It was the place where time began and time entered.
Well, this is interesting because this, as far as I'm concerned, also brings in Jacob's Ladder, because I know in the Mormon temples, having had been a former...
Isn't Jacob's Ladder a horror movie?
They but they had ascending and descending spiral staircases in the...
Right.
In the Salt Lake Temple, in the Logan Temple, the Manti Temple, and now we can pretty much figure out that these things have to do with DNA.
Well, you see that when you go to some of the Hopi petroglyphs, the more extensive petroglyphs that people aren't necessarily familiar with, and it's all these steps.
Well, I wonder why my people do everything counterclockwise, and everybody else over here in North America does everything clockwise.
Well, the Hopi do everything counterclockwise.
Okay, well then... Well, the Cherokee and the Hopi were considered, the twin fires anciently. And anciently the attitude was, if you did things counterclockwise, you were fine. If you didn't, you was witches.
Yeah.
That was the old belief.
Well, clockwise or sunwise brings the energy up from the earth to Ate, to the Father. Counterclockwise brings the energy from Ate, Father, down to the earth. So when you're calling Creator's blessings to you, you do things in a counter-clockwise manner. That brings the energy down from the heavens to the earth. And where it meets is supposed to be in you. You are the bridge between the earth and the sky. You're the bridge between Mother Earth and Father Sky. And so the apex, or where they meet, is in the human heart. That's why the Hopi say we have to think with our hearts again. Always filter everything through your heart first, because the mind plays many tricks. The mind does not always see things as they are. It sees things as it wants to be. It wants things to be. But the heart sees things as they are. So when you get that heart feeling, that gut feeling, that's what you should follow. But again, going back to the... Because we're talking about the moon and the sun and the signs and the things that happen. There's no way in reality, in my opinion, and who am I? I'm just a little ant on the earth. But in all the things that I've seen, there's no way that we can predict in time anything that is timeless. There's no way that we can predict in a linear manner anything that is eternal and spherical. And the universe is all of that. The Creator is all of that. The Creator comes from a place, wherever that place is, because it's within all things and around all things. But it's a place of no time. Time does not exist. So why do we keep trying to put things in terms of time? And when you have visions, if you're a true prophet or seer, you see things in visions. Well, vision means picture. I see things in pictures. So if you're seeing things in pictures, you do not see dates and times and minutes and seconds. You don't see things like that. What you see is this will start to happen, and the trees will start to die from the top down. The fish will get sick and come out of the water. The lands will dry up. You won't be able to grow things. The heavens will move in this manner. So when we tell time based on the legend and lore, And it's all indigenous people. Indigenous people are a global thing. It's not a regional thing. But they tell time in this way when they're dealing with the coming of a prophecy.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule. And this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
So many of new age type people would say, well, this is going to happen in 1992. The comet's going to hit the desert, so we all better move out of Arizona. And I know a lot of them were even sued by insurance, by real estate companies because they were bringing down the real estate. There's no way you can tell by a date. But when you start to see the signs that the ancients told us, when these things start to occur, start to pay attention. When this thing happens, you will know that we're close to the end time. When this happens, when we see the blue kachina come in the sky, and we see the blue and the white tail come out of the blue kachina, and it is the twins. And when this happens, we'll know that the time has begun. When that's how we've always been able to tell with accuracy when things are about to go upside down or inside out.
Now, as I'm not sure. I didn't do a lot of research, but I think we're talking about the 21st chapter of Luke here. And
okay.
As far as the signs and the...
Wait a minute. Let me get my other hat.
And the sun, moon, and stars. So, but then it goes on to say, immediately after the tribulation of these days, it says that the sun will refuse to give its light, and so it was coming with, you know, ending with the culmination and the return of the Creator God.
And there's stories in the Western Hemisphere, which we call, you know, indigenous lore, legend, myth, that talk about when this thing starts to begin with the sun, soon after things will start to become strange with the moon.
Yeah.
And the moon will disappear for a time. She will take her light from the earth. And when this starts to happen, there will be seven tears that fall from the heavens. And the seven tears will fall into the oceans and upon the land and cause great devastation.
Sounds like seven seals to me.
Sounds like seven seals to me.
Wow.
Sounds like the seven trumpets. But isn't it... Is it coincidental? Seven tears.
And where did that?
Which is one of the reasons why the black stone, the Apache tears, are so precious to them, because when they see a comet fall from the sky, and the comet falls from the sky, and it lands in the earth, and if it's big enough when it gets here, most of them hit the earth the size of a baseball or something. But when they're bigger and they're major and people look at them, aren't they, the stones are black.
Yeah.
The meteors are black. So the Apaches took these black stones and they call them Apache tears.
Yeah.
It's tied to the legend of the mother. You know, this is our sacred mother.
That's all kind
of. And our sacred mother has, you know, we have, to us, she's grandmother moon, but to the earth, she's sister moon. And there are these legends.
Now, the legend about the seven tears, well, can you remember where that came from?
Well, the ones that I have up on the website came from Apache and Navajo.
Okay, so there's a link. You folks here, if you're listening to this right now, you can click in the upper left-hand corner. It says, you can read more about Dr. Robert Ghostwolf, and then underneath his bio, it says Related Guest Website. Click on that, and it'll take you over to the website he prepared for this show.
Well, you want me to read one of them?
Sure.
This is Grandmother Moon. This is a White Feather Apache grandmother. And she's... This is her talking to Grandmother Moon. And Grandmother Moon talking to her. She's asking Grandmother Moon questions about what's happening. Because things are in chaos. Things are in turmoil. This is not that long ago, within 50 years. And Grandmother Moon looks at her and says, "Dear child, you know I believe, I live, I have a spirit. You have seen many, many changes. You are very ancient. My message is that I love all of my grandchildren and my daughter, the Earth. There is on the way comets or meteors that are coming. I am going to put myself in place so that these things will not hit the Earth, my daughter. This is what is going to split me. I will be leaving, but for me, two will be made. Within these two will be part of you. But this is going to create many changes on Earth. And within this, females on the planet the most. You must never forget me and always honor me, for within you, I will be. Create a bundle, both in the physical and within you. Teach the young ones of me. Always remember and honor me. The children of Earth must believe that there are many life forms all around them, and that each of our actions affect each other's reality. Respect all life forms, even if they do not look like you. I believe that all things living have a consciousness." And then Grandmother Moon, the grandmother asked the moon, "My tears are for the entities on this planet. Why can they not understand this thing? Why do they do to one, they do to themselves? Why don't they understand that? What they do to one, they'll do to themselves." And Grandmother Moon says, "Well, you've seen many changes in many worlds, my dear one. You understand you must teach others to understand. Your sister from Venus will be helping this Earth, who is her sister too. For you are sisters. In time, there will be a balance again here, and many changes will come. Sooner than you know, but for me to say this date, you know I cannot do this. I do not do this, and I do not understand time. But soon, Grandmother is asking for a healing. Pray for my spirit and honor me always, the ways of the woman. The woman's moon times are going to be affected, and so will their emotions." And it goes on to talk about the Earth changes, where she talks about Grandmother Moon. "The oceans will rise, and large waves and lava will rise and flow. This is a time for women to balance those things, and women will heal themselves and thus heal each other. Then they will help heal the men and together heal everything else. Grandmother then touched my face and kissed me. Teach the beauty way, you know it. You have been taught it, and you have taught it many times in many worlds. Remember me and do not forget." She goes on to talk about, "In that time, seven tears will fall into the oceans and upon the earth, and they will cause great devastation and change. Be prepared for this time. And now when this time comes, it will soon be the time of leaving for her." Now,
leaving.
These things that are going on in the moon...
You said leaving.
Pardon me?
You said that would be the time of leaving.
That she's leaving. The moon is leaving. Grandmother Moon is leaving. These are, what we're talking about now are events in the final days. Events that begin to occur in the end times that show us that everything that we know in our reality will alter. The Hopi have said to their children, when you look outside and you start to see the lights in the heavens, and you see things going on and people running around, that's when you go into the kiva. And don't come out of the kiva. Don't look. Don't, whatever you do, don't look. Stay in the kiva. These things will be happening all around you that you will not understand. You must stay in the kiva, because in that time things will change, and things that are not real will dissolve in front of you. You'll see things that will just not be able to be understood, and they will scare you and frighten you. So they're telling them to stay in the kiva, which is a natural structure. Therefore, anything that is unnatural, anything that's created from man, as the consciousness changes and the planet changes and the matrix changes and the physics change, those things will disappear. What are we talking about? Well, didn't they have pencils and scissors and little dolls and things in Atlantis? They must have. And yet, we don't find these things. We don't find these things. These things disappeared. We go down beneath the oceans, and when we look at what we believe are the remains of Atlantis, we find columns and stones and everything that's made natural, even sometimes boxes, and inside the boxes there is cloth, but the cloth is made from animal hair. It's made from wool or llama hair or camel hair. The things that are natural will sustain. The things that are not will dissolve. They will go away. And thus you will understand the nature of the dream that we actually live in. This is something that's impressed very deeply with the Hopi to their children. When I say Hopi, I'm talking Hopi cinema. I don't talk about Hopi because I don't know Hopi, because Hopis are just Hopis. They're just people. I talk about the Mayan priests and what they tell their children, which is very similar. And the same thing the Kogi tell their children. You know, that these times are coming and everything will change. It'll be weird. It'll be, things won't be explainable. But when these times come, you go into the earth, you go into the caves, you go into the kivas, you go into the natural places that we've taught you to do it. The Lakota used to say to go sit in a sweat lodge and wait it out. It's only going to be 3 days.
Yeah, that's what the Catholics say, too. 3 days of darkness.
Yeah, the way things are going, that might happen on November 7th. With the election.
Yeah.
Anyway, the stories talk about these seven tears that will fall from the heavens. They talk about Grandmother Moon is leaving, that she will take her light from us. They talk about these tremendous emotional storms. And as you get into some of the older legends and myth about this, stuff that was finally spoken about and allowed to be put out in public by Chief Dan of the Hopi, they talk about the star people coming back. And that a lot of these guys will come back and they'll be angry and they won't like us. So when they come, don't just go run out and jump on the rooftops and say, hey, we're over here. Because they may not like you. They're coming back to find out those who remembered their original teachings. Those who remembered the original teachings, they will not harm. But the rest, they will do unbelievable things to. Now, one of the things that's coincided with all of these letters I'm getting about the moon's changing, it's shifted. It's like you look outside, and one night, it's coming up. If you're looking out your window, it's directly over the rooftop that's in front of your door. And the next night, it's 40 feet away over here to the left. And then the next night, it's 30 feet over again to the right. So all I can deduce out of that is that the earth, when it turns, it wobbles, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't just turn like a ball. It turns like a gyroscope.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if you ever had that little toy, you know, an ancient toy that you can still get in Toys R Us, and you pull a little string in the gyroscope and you can put it on your finger or something, you know, and it sort of wobbles. And as it slows down, the wobbles become more intense.
Yeah.
And so as the Earth is losing its magnetic power, polarity, it is wobbling farther and farther. It's still spinning, so we still have the sense of gravity and things holding us here. But it's wobbling, so that could be why we're seeing the moon. And So
this is really the only way that you could really notice the Earth reeling to and fro like a drunken man.
Well, yep, just like a drunken sailor walking in a dock. And the wobbles are getting bigger and bigger. And when we go and we talk to airline pilots, and we talk to people in NASA, and we talk to anybody who uses navigational systems, they can no longer navigate by the stars. They can no longer navigate by any celestial body because it changes too fast. The magnetic poles change within minutes. Within minutes, they change as much as 6 to 8 degrees. So they've got to use these other GPS kind of instruments. All the planes are being flown that way now. They're not using what they have used for centuries for navigation. The other thing is that the winds have shifted. It now takes 15 minutes longer to fly from west to east than it does from east to west across the United States. Sometimes longer.
It used to take less time from west to east, as I recall.
Yeah, but now they're fighting all those winds.
Huh.
The winds that move everything, the winds that move the weather, which are all chaotic now, you know. And
hear about what, you ever hear about what happened in Grenada?
No. I mean, I may have.
Well, a good friend of mine who has to remain nameless, and the reason why he knows is because he's a canine officer. He got flown out there, and
this is Grenada where?
This is just after Ivan passed a few days ago.
Okay.
He said 90% of the houses out there, he says there was just concrete slabs with plumbing sticking up. They didn't find any people. He said FEMA's keeping everything under wraps, but he didn't see any people there. He was sent over there with canine to help look for people. So the entire island was just totally destroyed. Now, I was told back in 98 that 2005 would be known as the year of the great havoc. Looks like it's starting, you know. I'd always look for the beginning in September because the Jewish New Year's right around now, isn't it?
I thought it was Labor Day. Okay.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, right.
Grandpa used to say, every year at Labor Day, the weather changes the next day.
Yeah.
Well, it changed here because it was real cool up until Labor Day. Now it's summer again.
And the weather was weird here in Missouri. I mean, August, jeez. You know, we've been living here, I don't know.
Well, the basic things that the moon affects is emotion and water. The tides are affected by the moon, high tide, low tide. Storms are affected by the moon. Look at all hurricanes. Boom, 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 okay? Now, what I find really strange about the hurricanes, and I don't know how many people have noticed this, but all hurricanes come out of the same place.
Yeah.
They come from the same spot. It's like I want to go there and find out what's under there. Is there like a pyramid under there or something? Is there a crystal that's wobbling like the Bermuda Triangle? How come all these hurricanes come out of the same place?
Well, I also heard that they're getting hurricanes now in the southern hemisphere when they didn't have them before.
Yeah.
Or didn't have them as frequently. There's a lot of weird stuff going on with the weather. Like I say, here in August...
Well, look at all that's going on with the water. Water, rain, storm.
Yeah, in August...
This is all the moon.
For the last several years, and traditionally in August, you know, unless you drip irrigate here in Missouri, you know, it's going to burn up because there's just no rain until into September, you know, from late July until the end of August, there's nothing. And boy, I'm telling you, it was, I mean, we got down one day, I got up and it was foggy and it was 55 degrees and we're talking the middle of August, you know, strange weather.
Well, up here, we're in our 8th year of drought.
So you're near Santa Fe.
Yeah, and there's no end in sight. Water levels have dropped drastically. People are coming out from California and they don't understand it. They think that, you know, old houses come with forever water that comes through the tap.
Yeah.
And you know, like I mean, like they want to build near where I am, the developers have come up with plans to build 12,000 houses, okay? Because Albuquerque's growing so fast. They have their own little miniature Silicon Valley, and we now have millions of people who have come up from the south that have taken root here. And there's just, I mean, it's too crowded. And there's no water, and Albuquerque is a strange place because it's completely surrounded by reservation land, right?
Yeah.
So they can't expand west. There's like one place to come. It's up here in the mountains and the plateaus. And the thing is, there's no water here. You can't build 12,000 homes. There's not enough water now for the people that are here. We're already overbuilt. I mean, they have a golf course that's a few miles down the road from me that they built an aqueduct to bring water from 60 miles away to water the grass.
Sure.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Well, I cannot even imagine. And just for example, last night, you did a show last night that was 90 minutes starting at 7:30.
That's right.
Then you went through that. Then you came here. You're here this morning.
That's right.
Doing all of this.
It's nonstop. I don't sleep anymore.
No. All right. So where do you get the energy? Seriously, I mean, look at you.
Well,
I mean, we've known each other a long time. Yeah. We've passed. You don't ever get older.
Well, thank you. It's quite funny because, you know, people are kind of shocked when they hear that I'm 54 years old, and they say, how do you keep your youth? I have found something, Dr. Phil, that I think is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Oh, you do have a secret.
I have a secret, and I've never really talked about it. Well, I've been doing this for the last 2 years. It's called Protandem, and it works. And I'm telling everybody about this.
You feel differently.
I do.
Because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're hitting the times. You're getting where you're supposed to be.
I have to be on the spot all the time.
Now, I've got three sisters, and we get along great 1,500 miles apart. I cannot imagine.
It takes me 1,600 miles.
Yeah, but I can't imagine working with my sister every day. What do you do when you have disagreements? Because you have to have disagreements, right? Because
well,
you're both producers.
Yeah, we're both producers, and that's difficult because we're both type A. And you're going to butt heads. What's really interesting about the Donnie Marie duo is that it doesn't really matter how much we butt the heads when that curtain goes.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And I'm sitting going, this is nuts, okay? And, like, where I am in the last 2 years, and I'm up in the mountains, and I'm in one of the few places where when you put the well down in the ground, you know, the water comes up, you can drink it. The water up here, where I am, is as good as the water you buy in a store, but the water levels have dropped 200 feet.
Yeah.
And so in the last 2 years, we've had over 300 wells that went dry. And they still want to build 10,000 houses, 12,000 houses. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, it's madness. It's madness, you know. I remember years ago when grandmother said to me, and one day they'll be selling the air and the water. And we looked at her like, give me a break, you know, what are you talking about? You know, I think grandma's on one of her Indian trips.
They're selling the water now.
And now, yeah, hey, man, go down to 7-Eleven, man. It's $1.89 for 8 ounces of water.
33,000.
You go into the Air Force in Japan and different places like that, they sell oxygen. You know that?
No, I didn't know that.
It's like, have another hit of clean air.
Who is this grandmother you were telling me about?
This is Grandmother Kitty.
Kitty?
She's in a coat of soup.
Okay.
But I remember those stories. You know, we used to sit down and listen to her stories about what was going to happen. And, you know, sure as hell, they are now selling water and air. And the wars are all about water. Coca-Cola's buying up all the water. Monsanto's buying up all the water. They're buying up all the water.
There's one Indian tribe here in Missouri, man. They split over water. The chief was smart enough to want to go into the water business, but the vice chief had other ideas, so they cooked up something and... they were going to be the only supplier for...
right now in America,
Mississippi,
70% of the rivers are polluted.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I'm
shaped to China.
One of the reasons why I'm here is we've got, what, I believe, 14 of the 15 biggest springs in the world, right here in the Ozarks.
Well, I had a hard winter, but there's
water.
Summer. My well went dry.
Yeah.
And I got horses and livestock. And let me tell you, when you're hauling water every day in buckets, you know, I mean, it hits you real hard how precious that water is.
Yeah.
And the one thing you understand is that you cannot live without water. You can't grow things. You can't do things. You cannot live without water. Now, where I am, we used to go down 150 to 174 feet, and we get crystal water. I mean, the same kind of water you buy in Sam's and Walmart. Now we have to go down to 300 to 400 feet to get that water. And when we go down there, we get the water, but the water's slow. So what we're doing is we're doing smart wells now, where we take the well and it pumps a couple of gallons every hour, so it keeps filling up a tank, so that you're taking your water out of the tank instead of purging the well, because every time you purge the well, you kick up the mud and everything else.
Yeah.
And that shortens the life on the pump. But, I mean, this is what's going on all over the place. Most of the houses in the Southwest, they have serious water problems. And yet, those builders, man, they're like termites. They just keep building and building and building. And this is the desert.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a desert when we started, you know. And now, it's 75% worse. And yet, they're going to move all this population here. Well, the desert was never made to handle that population. So I think this is part of the reason why we're seeing the elementals at war with humankind. The elementals are at war. And people go, oh, elementals, right? This guy is, you know, he believes in fairies and elves and little crazy things and lice that move in the trees. Well, I've seen them. I've seen those little orbs going through the woods. I've seen these things, and I know one thing. In the old days, every river had a guardian. Every river had a caretaker. Every lake had a caretaker. And it was that caretaker's job to go out there and make sacrifice or ritual to talk to the water, to take care of that river, to let that river know that it was loved, it was needed, it was essential for life, and the people had water. Well, we don't do that anymore because we're too smart now, right? We're too smart. Carlisle Group will come in and they'll put a big thing through here because they got to come through this way to get to Dallas, so we'll have plenty of water that way. So we stop praying and we stop talking to the water and we stop taking care of the rivers and we stop taking care of the creeks and we stop honoring ancient ways that were thousands and thousands of years old. And what's happening, man? The water is either unpotable or it's dried up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone. It's like, you know, the world's changing so fast. It's like, go out now. You don't see herds of cattle. You don't see these big ranches. Everybody's splitting them up into 5 and 10 acre lots so that they can make money and sell it. And they bring 5,000 people in. And like, how are they going to live? You know, so they go through 5 years of that and everybody changes because they can't make a living. And then they sell half the houses. And then they put up a Walmart. And they employ 200 people.
What's the humidity like there?
It's usually about 8%.
See, they've got machines now that'll take the humidity out of the air and,
They call them cedar trees, don't they?
Drinking water. You know, they've got the machines.
Cedar trees drink 15 gallons of water a day out of the air.
Oh, my gosh. But these machines...
When you go over to Pace in Arizona, and you go there now, there are all these flat cedars.
Yeah.
But if you went back 80 years ago, they were all maple and birch and cottonwood. They were big pine. They were big timber areas. They used it all to build Phoenix. And so when you go up to that Payson area now, it's all desert and dry. But it wasn't that way. It was filled with creeks. They had elk. They had deer. I mean, where I am now over here in the Sandias, they still got the signs up on the highway that say, watch out for deer and elk, but there hasn't been a deer or elk up here for 10 years.
Well,
okay, and then when the herd grows, it's like, well, we decided that we're going to open up licensing to kill the elk because we found out there were 35 elk in those mountains. It's like, what are you, nuts? You know, so, and then what happens? Well, when you go up into the mountains, what you find out a lot of times is that the government or the military or somebody, I don't know who, but somebody's controlling the water because they got these big 18-inch valves that come up out of the ground by the sides of the creek in these pump houses, and the creeks are dry, and the creeks always ran with at least 8 to 16 inches of water in them, okay? And now they have all these, well, the mountain lions are coming down and killing the dogs, and they're in the backyards, and the bears are in the garbage, and they're coming down into town. Well, there's no water up on the hill. There's nothing to sustain life on the hill, so everything's running down to wherever the water source is, wherever the food source is. You know, it's just this mindless insanity. Like,
and when they come down off the mountain, they have trouble turning that valve, huh? Those bears.
The bears can do it sometimes.
Yeah.
The bears just sort of sit there, and if they can't turn it, they just knock it off.
Yeah.
You know, but the mountain lions are something to contend with. I mean, we've had 2 mountain lion attacks on dogs here.
There's been a lot more in Utah also, and I know Mace with a Manti, and it was a notable area for cougar attacks, and a lot more in the last 10 years, 15 years.
When I was a kid, I read a book called Jungle Book. And in Jungle Book, Rudyard Kipling, and there's Sabu is the little prince in the jungle. And there's this tiger there, Shere Khan. And Shere Khan hates man because of his stupidity and his blindness. Well, I think that we're seeing a lot of that up here with the lions, because there's just this total unconscionable misuse of a very, very precious resource. And like I said, when you got to start hauling water every day, and you got to wash out of a bucket, and you got to clean your dishes out of a bucket, and you got to clean your floors out of a bucket, and you got to wash your clothes that way, and you're thrown back to the real Jeremiah Johnson days, you start to realize how precious it is. Because at the end of the day, when you're pumping down, you know, buckets of water, and you got to bring 60, 70 gallons of water in to run a family, you're going to get pretty frustrated.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start looking at people when they just, you know, take the glass of water and don't drink it, or they use, you know, 20 gallons of water to wash the breakfast dishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've forgotten how precious it is and how hard it is to come by out here in the desert. And yet they still keep talking about building malls and golf courses.
Well, now we know why the mountain men, they use their cast iron, they wash their dishes with sand, then they douse it a little water and let it dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they leave it out in the sun because it'll kill anything that's in there.
That's right.
I've seen people come out here and move here from the city, and they come out here and they're watering the lawn with sprinklers. And I look at them and go, what are you, crazy? This is the 8th year of a drought. There is no water. We don't water the lawns. This is a desert. They still want green lawns like they were in Massachusetts or something, you know?
Wow.
Like the little green lawns in Connecticut, you know? It's not that way. This is a desert. And, you know, the hummingbirds get affected. Hummingbirds need a lot of water. I got a tree out in front of my house, and I got 16 hummingbird feeders in there because sometimes there's as many as 200 hummingbirds in that tree because they know that's where the water is.
Well, you've lost a lot of sugar water.
Yeah. But you got to keep those little critters going.
Yeah.
You know, they're just always looking for water. I mean, I go out to fill water in the buckets to bring down the horses, and they're all over me, so I put out a bucket, and I put it far away from me up on top, and he'll just skim down over it. But, I mean, you know, I mean, you got 8% humidity, everything dries up. You're surrounded by cedar trees because they killed all the pinyon and the other pines. There used to be a lot of white pines up here and black pines. Red pines. And they're all gone, so all that's left is a cedar. And I'm telling you, because I saw it in Payson. All the creeks are dried up, everything's dried up. That was the forest. I mean, when you go into the back parts of that area and you go into the forest walkways, they still have ferns and things growing in the forest, okay? If you come here to certain places in the Manzanos and things where people haven't gotten yet, you can still see the fern forests, okay? Wild lilies and things growing in the forest. But every place else, it is gone. So they're changing the whole face of the earth. They're changing it. They're changing it into the very thing that made the Anasazi have to migrate out of here because they had no water.
Yeah.
You know. And And again, it doesn't matter because it's all money, right? And the other thing about those people is when they come out here, I remember this one woman, I went to this town meeting because they were having water wars, and this woman, who is part Spanish, part Indian, no, she's been here 300 years with her family, at least. And these people are coming up with how they can move the water and how they can build the golf course, how they can put more development here. And she just gets up and looks at them. She puts her arms across her chest and she takes her stand and she goes, "What I don't understand is that how come you left everything that you didn't like to come here and now you want to change everything here to be like where you left? Why don't you take time and learn how we live here?" Because what they don't understand also is that a lot of these people out here in the mountains and in the country, they're agricultural people. It's not that they're lesser. It's that that's what they love. That's what their life is about. Their life is about getting up and getting on the horse and working the cattle and working the farm and doing it. It's a whole way of life. So what, are they going to annihilate all of us that live in the rural areas so they can build their urban areas, which are nothing but stinking pots of disease? I mean, every time you go to the city, every time you go to Walmart, you come home with a cold. Every time you send your kids to school, they bring sickness into the house. It's like, you know, you it's like the Hopi says, Kayanasquatsi, it's the world out of balance. We have to start respecting all of these little things, and we have to start respecting these elementals. Because they're the ones that make the water come. They're the ones that make the flowers bloom. They're the ones that make sure that all the little things that are supposed to grow where they grow, grow. And when there's no place for them, and we don't pay any attention to them because we think that we're the lords of the earth and the lords of the universe, well then, we're going to lose. We don't have anybody to win. We're going to lose. And we're seeing it every day. We're seeing that happen in our society. We're seeing that happen with the children who have no hope for the future because they're, I mean, if you know, they're selling houses up here now for between $300,000 and $500,000. It's like, who the hell can afford that over here? Nobody can afford that over here. That's why we moved over here, okay? Because we wanted to be artists, we wanted to be ranchers, we wanted to ride horses, we wanted to do things. So we didn't have to get caught up in that gerbil wheel, you know? And, you know, the gerbil wheel, where you have all the money and you have all the things, but you never have time to do it. Because you're too busy working for the man.
Cool.
You know, you're busy working for the man, son. You gotta work, son, you know? And it's like, you know, well, yeah, you got to work, but aren't you supposed to work at what you love?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, I guess, you know, there's very little chance that here in the Ozarks will ever become overpopulated like that because there's just not a lot of jobs here. There's water, and there's, you can still grow stuff here.
Well, you may not have that now, but you're gonna have a lot of people there soon.
Yeah.
Because they're all going to run, and you can't live without water. They're going to go where the water is.
Supposedly this particular area may become an island.
Did you see the news stories of what was going on in Florida?
Yeah.
And the evacuations?
Yeah.
And I kept sitting here and I kept going, this is like a big game for Fahrenheit 714 or something. They're getting all these people under control of the media. All they do all day is play the hurricane. The hurricane's 400 miles away, but they're going to watch it come all the way up here. They're getting all these people out of here. And they're getting them all to respond to behavioral patterns.
Yeah.
And you got these people, and they go out on these freeways, and they're bumper to bumper for 200 miles, and they go to a place where the hurricane hits them anyway. I mean, yeah, it's right? I mean, you know, and I'm watching all this stuff. And, you know, there's no room. You can't get any hotels, you know, because everybody's running up to Atlanta and Augusta, for crying out loud, to try to get out of, because we have a store in Atlanta. And you can't, there's no hotels in Atlanta because everybody's trying to get out of Florida. And I'm looking at these roads, and I remember the visions that I used to have of people on the roads like that, these migrations from the urban areas. And also, they know that. Where are they going to go? Because survival is the strongest instinct after murder and sex.
Yeah.
Okay, and when you don't have the things to survive, it becomes the primal drive. Because you can't live without the water. You can't move without the water. And I'm seeing this stuff, you know. And, you know, they got plenty of water in Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, they got 16 inches of wire in Florida, but they can't drink it. And what they're not telling you now is, like, what's going to happen? The worst part of the flood, you know, the scary part of the flood is while it's going on, but the worst part of the flood is after the flood, and you get all that typhus and everything else, and the water's all polluted, and the people are getting sick, and everything's full of disease.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom once lived through the 1927 floods on the Mississippi, and she drank some bad water, had 16 carbuncles along her spine. Remember having to have them land. It's horrible, just from drinking polluted water.
That's right.
Oils on her spine.
And then everybody's going to be sick. They're going to get all these viruses and stuff that they're spraying down with the chemtrails. I mean, they're spraying influenza. They're spraying pneumonia. We have all the tests. All the tests are out there to prove that the stuff is there, that people aren't just crazy. It's just that, you know, right now it's an election. We're not going to bring this story up, says the guy from the New York Times. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, don't you care about that there's, like, you know, tens of millions of people that are going to get sick from this thing?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Last night, it's funny you should ask that.
Did you tally?
706, I think, was last.
706.
Yeah.
How do you find the energy to keep doing it night after night?
Oh, well, now the show evolves. You know, Marie and I change it up every once in a while, and so it keeps it fun. It keeps it exciting. The audience last night was just amazing. They were just, I love hecklers. I love when I do.
People heckle you?
Well, yeah.
Kind of, just to kind of get fun.
For fun. I mean, there's interaction with the audience, and I love that because it just changes it up a little bit and keeps it fresh.
Keeps it.
And the band, we probably have the best band in Las Vegas.
How many numbers do you think you do on the show?
Oh, I don't know.
It rotates out all the time.
Yeah, it changes constantly. I do this number called Yo-Yo, and the dancing, it was a hit we had back in the early 70s, and we do all this dancing. It just wears me out. It's my cardio for the day.
Well, you were the Dancing with the Stars champion in 2009. Where is your mirror ball trophy?
It's in the lobby of the Flamingo.
It is?
Yeah, it's in a glass case so Marie doesn't steal it.
I have not seen it. I have to go by there and check it out.
Yes.
And, you know, every time my brother stays at the Bellagio, he says you're staring at him.
I am. Oh, the big Donnie and Marie picture on the wall. Yes.
Is that weird driving by and seeing that every single
time? I call it my ego picture. If ever I'm feeling bad, I just drive past the front and look at it and say, that's me.
It's a pick-me-up. And you're going on tour to
yes.
the UK and doing a holiday concert as well.
That's right.
When is that happening?
Well, that's the UK is going to be in January. Then we go to Los Angeles and Phoenix and Salt Lake City for the Christmas tour in December.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nonstop.
It is. And you do your radio show as well.
Radio show, yeah.
And then also, you know, we get a lot of comments. So people have been emailing me and saying they love how you look. Like, you're ageless. It's incredible. So
I have a secret.
What is your secret?
I have a secret formula, and it's a company called LifeVantage. They came up with a product called Protandem. Now, what causes the aging process is free radicals in our body, oxidative stress.
Mm-hmm.
This Protandem stuff, I've been taking it for 2 years.
We have it on the table right
there. Clinically proven to slow the aging process down. It reduces the oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days.
That's
and I said,
secret.
I said, whatever, you know. So I tested it, and it works. And the nice thing, it's not pharmaceutical. It's it's real food.
I'm going to have to give it a try.
Oh, you don't need it. You look beautiful.
I want it, for sure.
But it works for me. I'm 94 years old.
I'm looking fabulous. And you know what? Your son is here with you. He made a big announcement yesterday, too.
That's right. He's going to have a baby. Well, his wife's going to have a baby. My fifth grandchild.
Your fifth grandchild. How many kids do you have, really quickly?
42 that I know.
Do you keep a GPS tracking device on all of them?
Yeah, sure. No, I have five wonderful boys, and three of them are married, and five grandkids.
It's a handful, isn't it?
And I feel like I'm 20. Thank you, Protandem.
And then don't forget that polluted crap, well, you drink the water, you put the water on your skin, so you absorb it both ways there. You feed it to the animals, and the animals get it. The animals defecate, so now it's in the animal poop. The birds pick it up. They take it. They now have the virus. The mosquitoes bite the birds. Now we get the virus because the mosquitoes bite us. And the horses start dying because the mosquitoes bite the horses, okay? And then it goes on that, you know, we're watering our flowers, and we're watering our garden, and we're eating this shit. And that's what it is shit. We're eating this stuff, and we're wondering, why are we getting sick? How come our livers are going? How come our pancreases aren't functioning? How come our thyroids are all screwed up? How come I got, like, you know, pains in my joints and all this stuff? How come everybody's getting Alzheimer's disease? Look, we're eating and drinking our own garbage now.
Yeah. And so what scares me is when these people who are sitting think that chickens and everything, you know, grow in cellophane. You know, that's the way they come. They're naked without feathers, you know, because those things with the feathers, I don't know what the hell they are. I never saw that before. You know, I remember driving, you know, 20 years ago across country and saying to my kids when we passed the cattle farm and going, hey, look at all the McDonald's. And they got really upset. They didn't want any McDonald's anymore. They wanted to go play with the pretty cows. Because people in the city don't realize that this is where it comes from. Well, if you're feeding them garbage and then you're eating them, what are you going to become? What are you going to live with? How are you going to wonder why you're in pain, why you have arthritis, why you have no energy? Well, because you're eating your own defecation. And the water, well, you know, sure, they got to take the water, they got to treat the water, they do this, they build giant reservoirs, they put chemicals in the water, and they put the fish in the water, and the fish die. So if the fish die, what the hell is going to happen to me? If the fish have stunted growth, what's going to happen to my kids? If the fish are so stupid that they commit suicide, well, then what's going to happen to my kids? So are we becoming this society that lives off garbage and chemicals?
I'll agree.
Maybe that's the next step. Maybe that's the next step, you know.
Well, I love hearing.
And I know that all this stuff, people go, well, you know, we heard this stuff before, and the Hopis get up and tell us the prophecies, or they go up to the Algonquins up there in the Northeast, and they tell the prophecies. And they go to the Athabascans up in Alaska and Canada, and they tell the prophecies. They go, well, we've heard all this stuff. But they are so numb to what's going on around them, and they think that people like us who talk about health and the importance of minerals, the importance of taking things for cleansing toxins out of your body, and all these other things, the importance of changing your diet and learning how to read those codes in a supermarket so that you don't eat genetically grown foods that have no nourishment whatsoever. I mean, you know, when you take a baked potato and it doesn't mash anymore, you know.
Yes.
It's fiber. It's I don't know what it is anymore, but it's not a potato, okay? But, like, you know, it's scary and it's aggravating, but, like, you never see the change happen in an instant. That only happens in Hollywood in a Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah.
It happens, this generation gets dumber, this generation gets sicker, that generation gets even dumber, and we're seeing that. We're seeing people today without the basic ability to reason because they've got problems in the neuronal system from all the chemicals and toxins.
And the rise of corporate greed. Abraham Lincoln predicted that he thought it would be the downfall of this country. You know, that's happening in Rome, too.
Well, everybody can vote for Bush all they want, but all they're doing is voting the Carlyle Group in there, and they got to realize that. And all the Carlyle Group is corporate America. Take a look at the newscasters. You don't see the people that we used to see anymore. The news is all corporate. They're all corporate nerds working in there. They're people who haven't the slightest understanding of what real life is about because they've lived in apartments, condos, and air-conditioned cars and office buildings all their lives. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But when you lose the touch with everything around you that's real and how that potato got on your plate and how that string bean got there and how many hands it had to go through and how many hundreds of people had to bring that meal to your table, when you can't even see that anymore, well, then you take it for granted, you know. You take it for granted, you know. But when you're out here and, you know, and the rain comes and it ruins the crop, or the frost comes and you're wiped out, I mean, you know, watch orange juice triple in price.
Oh, yeah.
The entire orange market in Florida, and I see those trucks on Highway 40 right out here going through Albuquerque from Florida, from Indian River country. Okay, well, they ain't going to be coming this way because there's no orange juice. So they're going to have to get it from China or something.
Israel.
That's right. But, you know, whatever it is, here's your orange juice. That's one square. It just costs you $6.
You know, well, I guess maybe we're all going to have to go down to Belize with our guest from last week. I don't know if they had a chance to listen to that interview, but you ought to, because he feels strongly. He's being led down there, and he found out that the Mayans down there, they've always believed that would be the last place for the showdown between good and evil. But people are being led to different places. It's really interesting. All I know is I was told back in the 80s that I would hear different things. No, it's 1990. Creator told me, you will hear different things. You may even hear brighter promises. But don't worry, just follow me. Mm-hmm. And you know, a few years prior to that, he told me, three or four times in 1 year that someday, during a time of trouble, you'll go to a place underground, but man-made. But he didn't say that man-made. I could see that there were man-made things in this underground place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if anybody, I ought to have a lot of people that are listening out there. You know,
I hope some of them are.
Yeah, well, I know they are. There isn't any real reason to have anxiety. You just need to get a connection with Creator, and He's going to have to lead you out.
Well, you know, like everybody sits there and they run around like gerbils on the wheel, and they go, well, how do we change it? What can we do? Well, you start with your own house. And then you talk to your neighbor, and you say to him, hey, I know you got to wash your car, but did you have to leave the hose running all the time?
Yeah.
You start calling him on things, and you start doing things. You know, people learn by example, so they see you doing it, and they go, well, you know, Otter's out there, and he's pulling all those jars and jarring things and putting it in the closet there. And, you know, I mean...
Yeah, our garden
in the winter time.
Our garden was on the front porch this year.
You know,
in storage containers. We buy, you know, like a Rubbermaid storage container.
You don't change the world; you change yourself.
Yeah, you fill them up.
When you change yourself, someone's going to see it and go, "Hey, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll try that." And then slowly it starts to change, and you turn around, and you pay attention to what's going on in your community. And we don't want to build a golf course here. We don't need a golf course.
We're still pulling string beans and tomatoes and I bet the carrots are just huge, you know,
watch out for the big bunnies.
Oh, yeah. And we got three cats out there guarding outside, two dogs inside. And a black walnut tree that shades the whole house, so we're in pretty good shape.
Well, there's a lot of things you can do with walnuts.
Oh.
Walnuts are good. You can take the, you can make a tincture from the walnuts.
Oh, yeah.
And it kills little parasites.
Yeah, that's right, black walnut hulls. That's what it does. It's some nasty stuff, but it kills parasites.
And right now we have to realize that absolutely everything we eat has parasites. Because all the natural immunities that things used to have, they don't have anymore.
Oh, candida, everybody's got it.
Yeah, and they're wondering why they ache and they're tired and they're, you know, they get up from the chair to walk over to change the TV channel if they don't have a channel that works. Automatic things, and they get up and it hurts, you know.
Yeah.
It's because your body's all full of toxins. You spend 80% of your energy fighting the toxin instead of doing.
Oh, about 6 years ago, I got the bright idea. I wanted to try one of those copper bracelets, you know.
Yeah.
And because I heard they were good for arthritis. So I didn't have arthritis. I just thought it'd be fun to have one. So I got a piece of Romex, you know, like for wiring houses. It was about a foot long, and I stripped the everything off of it.
You're a Cherokee bracelet, huh?
Well, yeah, I just
had a Romex.
It was about 8 9 inches long.
And it's copper, by the way.
Yeah, it's copper, and I just braided it. We just stripped the plastic away and then braided the copper, put it on my wrist, and I was going, see, that's really pretty. And then I'm just sitting on the bed. I think it was a Sunday. I was just doing some reading. I was sitting on the couch. We're on a 35-foot fifth wheel. My wife's up in the gooseneck reading in the bed. And I started smelling something. I said, honey, are you cooking bread? She says, no. You got to understand, it's kind of in Utah. It's real windy there, okay?
All right.
And I said, oh, come on. I said, you're cooking bread. I said, I smell the yeast. She says, no, you're nuts. And then I went. Then I realized, oh my gosh! An hour ago, I put this stupid bracelet on, and it was the copper was driving the yeast out of my pores.
Right. Well, that's some of the strange things too. You know, if you go to my website, can I give it?
Sure, absolutely.
www.robertghostwolf, one word, robertghostwolf.com. www.robertghostwolf.com. There's a site up there called the World Natural Health Organization. There's a lot of information about all this stuff up there, what to do and what is happening and what's going on. As a matter of fact, right now there's a major lawsuit that's been filed against some of the big hooey-hoos in Washington, D.C., whose names will not be mentioned here. But they're right up there. They're the guys you've been seeing on TV, who are all part of this Carlisle group, who are being brought to court, files being charged against them for crimes against humanity and the deliberate selling of aspartame, putting it in children's lunch meals and everything else, because aspartame is pure, absolute poison. Diet Coke is a death drink. All the cereals, they're taking sugar out and they're putting aspartame in them, and then they're putting all these artificial sweeteners in them, and they all contain aspartame. Pick up almost any can in the store, any box in the store, and take a look at it, and you'll see that it's got aspartame in it, okay? There are people who have had brain tumors where they've gone into the brain and found out that the tumor was actually a deposit of aspartame, because it never breaks down in the body. It was a solid deposit of aspartame the size of an almond. Okay? And then they wonder why their brains are going and thing. There's a woman right now on trial. There's a story up there on the World Natural Health Organization. She is on trial for killing her husband. They say that she poisoned the husband. And what they found out is that the husband died from aspartame poisoning. He was a Diet Coke freak. Okay? So there's a movement right now to get this woman released from prison because she didn't do anything. The husband was drinking Diet Coke. People have to realize what's going on, and this thing is about to make major media news. And it might even become one of the topics for the election because, like I said, there's a lot of very powerful pillars of the community who are involved in this disgusting corporate greed thing. And also, aspartame is very addicting. If you've ever noticed the presidents, and you've noticed, like, remember when Bill Clinton used to have that W.C. Fields nose?
Yeah.
It was like getting really bulbous and big and red. And that was all because they feed the president Diet Coke all day long. They just keep feeding them Diet Coke in the White House. You know, so what, are they trying to poison the president? I mean, I'm not political, because it doesn't pay to be political, because all politicians are excreted and not born. But the thing is when it comes down to crimes against humanity, people have got to stand up and take notice, and they've got to say no. And if their children and their minds mean anything to them, if they don't want to get Alzheimer's and all these other diseases that they come, and liver diseases and all these other things, gallbladder diseases that are a result of aspartame, they've got to start paying attention, because aspartame is poison. That's what it is. I mean, you might as well take rat poison. It'll kill you quicker.
Wow.
Because there's nothing worse in the world than getting to the age of when you're supposed to be walking in wisdom and you don't even have a mind. You can't even find the buttons on your shirt. You know?
Yeah.
And your kids walk in a room and you don't know who they are. And it's all because of these chemicals. So people, you don't have to listen to me, and you don't have to listen to Otter, and you don't have to go to the World Natural Health Organization to look this stuff up. But don't come to me later and say, "Heal me, I hurt. Help my grandmother that she can't think. My kids are crazy. They don't sleep. They climb up the walls." Just keep feeding them aspartame. Keep giving them frosted flakes. Keep doing that stuff. And
same as xylitol.
Pardon me?
Xylitol is fantastic stuff. Xylitol is what we use here in our house. XYL.
I use stevia.
Yeah, well, stevia is good. Xylitol is some wonderful stuff.
I got tired of the roller coaster rides.
It's not a sugar. It's a natural substance, and it actually helps your body regulate its blood sugar. I think it costs about three times more than sugar, but hey. And this is something that's actually good for you, and it's as sweet as sugar, spoonful for spoonful.
Well,
great stuff.
Use less.
Well, yeah, you don't have to.
Use less, you know, and sometimes the stuff, like stevia, it comes in these packets, and really, you know, a half of that little packet is the same thing as a teaspoon of sugar.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
so people are used to, you know, drinking their Diet Cokes and stuff like that. It's like, you know, drink it, man. It's like 22 teaspoons of sugar instead of a can of Coke.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I noticed that, well, the nice thing about xylitol is you can bake with it and do everything. Just, you know, I noticed Coke. Have you tried the new Coke with the new C2 drink?
No.
Pretty good. It's less sugar. And the thing I like about Coke is it's got a little bit of...
I drink chai tea.
Cinnamon in it.
Green tea. Apple juice. Grape juice is incredible. Concord grape juice is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It fights cancer.
Good, it is. Keeps you regular, too.
And it purifies your blood.
It does. It's an antioxidant.
And it takes all the metal toxins out of it. And, you know, it's like we now are at a place, you know, keep reading your Bible. Keep reading whatever you're reading. Keep hearing them say the end times. You know, keep hearing them say, well, it's now, instead of the end times, they should call it the time of responsibilities. You have to take responsibilities for your life. And especially if you're over 40. You know, up to 40, you get a free ride.
Yeah.
Then after 40, you got to start pacing yourself, you know. I mean, you know, I'm fairly active kind of guy. I'm an outdoorsy guy. I mean, I work with concrete, I work with horses, I hike, I hunt, I do all this stuff. But, like, I got to pace myself. I don't just have this wild energy that runs through me anymore. But I'll tell you the other thing. If they got off all that stuff, there would probably be less domestic violence. There would probably be less violence in the home because people are not reacting to their own emotions. They're reacting to the emotions of the candida that's taken over their body. Talk about alien vampire invasions. These things come into your body and take over your entire consciousness. They'll change the way you eat. They'll change the way you behave. And you are now responding to the candida. You're responding to the parasite. You're not responding to your own emotions anymore. And, you know, I mean, look at diabetes. It's rampant in the world now, especially in the Native American world. And it's because our bodies were not meant to process all that sugar.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay, let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule, because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical, and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the 2-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical. And obviously, many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
I mean, 35,000 years at least, we ate natural things.
Yep.
How come people keep coming to us and go, where's the herbs, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, we're all sick with the flu. Can you make some of that horrible tasting stuff?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, sure, it gets rid of it. 3 days later, you're okay. But it's like, you know, it's getting harder and harder to find those herbs.
Well, it's getting harder and harder to find good soil to grow anything in. Understand that if you were to take spinach that's they're grown in the Central Valley of California and assay it for iron, you'll find none. It used to be that you couldn't, it wasn't anything that had more iron in it but spinach. But they only put three or four chemicals back in the soil, and it's just enough to get the nitrogen effect and make it look pretty and blue and green. And, well, you know, that natural gas will do that and make it look pretty too for a while just before it dies.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a nitrogen effect.
What we know right now is that something's going on with the moon. We don't really know what.
Nobody's talking.
Because nobody's talking, everybody's watching the elections, and who forged whose documents?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
The point of the matter is, who's going to take care of the people? Who's going to worry about our health? Who's going to worry about our kids? Who's going to worry about the sickness? Because the sickness is everywhere now. Hospitals are filled. They turn people away from the hospitals. They don't put this stuff on the news because it's not good for the election. Respiratory illness, diabetes, tuberculosis that's immune to all known treatment. Well, you better start paying attention to that old man's beard that grows in those dead apple trees and things, because that'll kill it.
Huh.
But you got to know how to do it. You got to know how to process it. You don't just go out and eat it like a sheep. You know, you got to take that stuff and you got to boil it in wine, because the alcohol releases the enzyme that turns around and then kills the prions that are in your lung. Because the prions grow in fungus, so the fungus can't grow now, and so there's no way for it to proliferate itself. But it's just changing your diet while it's still here. You know, we still have a conscious choice. But very, very soon, very, very soon, for millions of people, there will be no choice. And that's what we have to realize. There will be no choice for those people. So if you're out there in the mountains, you've got to start learning how to work in communities again. You got to start learning how to overcome the differences between yourselves and get into the likenesses between yourselves. Because, you know, when human beings work together, it's a lot easier. It's real hard for one guy to dig an irrigation ditch all by himself with a hoe. But you get 12 guys together, you can get it done in a couple of days.
Yep.
So we've got to start doing things like that. We've got to say, okay, well, you're growing the string beans, and you're growing the tomatoes, and you're growing this, and I'll grow the pumpkins and the zucchini. And, you know, and I'll grow the tobacco. Because I know that when you're all sitting around drinking that moonshine, you're all going to want to smoke.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, it's already up to some places it's $6 for a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, it's 10 in Canada.
Yeah, 12 in B.C.
Yeah, Saskatchewan, it's $11. Can you imagine?
A friend of mine asked me if I could send them up American Spirit cigarettes because they're natural and that's what they like to smoke, because they came down here and that's what I smoke, and they went, oh, we want some of those American. They said, and when we went down to buy the American Spirit cigarettes, they were $80 a carton. I said, wow. You better start learning how to smoke a pipe.
My word.
You know, but...
You know, they got these little machines now that's, you see those new cigarette making machines that just kind of inject the... They come in a little tube with a filter.
Yep.
And it's got a little cool thing that just kind of injects the cut, you know.
That's the one that's in the cigarette stores next to the cigar store, isn't it?
Yeah, they're made by...
Natural blend.
Yeah, the people that made rolling papers, it looks like a picture of Jesus on it. Zigzag makes this little cigarette machine.
Right.
And
I tried some of that tobacco. I'd rather smoke hay.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to use. You can still use the machine with the tobacco, though. and you just roll. And you can actually, some people are reusing the filters once too, because you roll the filter too. And there's cheaper ways of doing things. There's also pipes.
There's also pipes. Smoke herbs.
That's right.
You know? And that doesn't mean pot, okay? You don't want to do that. That just kills your brain. And what you're actually getting high off of is... You know what you get high off of when you smoke pot? You're actually getting high off the death hormone that is secreted in the brain. And it's the same, you know, like when people die, they get that smile.
Yeah.
Everything's wonderful. You should have had more sex and more ice cream. Well, it's because of that death hormone. And that death hormone puts the body into a space of almost like a euphoric numbness. And that's the high.
Oh, my word.
So, you know, what you're literally doing is killing your brain. And you're getting high off the dying of the brain cells, because when the brain cells die, they release this death hormone in the body. It's scientific fact. So,
I know some forms of THC are really radioactive.
Yeah. You know, when people do herbs and things like that, they have to understand that for thousands of years, we always did things as high ceremonial sacrament. We did not do things for recreational purposes. Peyote is not for recreational purposes. And when Strawberry Head comes up out of the ground and stares in your eyeballs, you'll know why. But, and, you know, there's a right way to do things, and there's a stupid way to do things. And part of the reason why we're seeing so many people out there, kids and everything, can't think, is because you notice how quiet they're being, and yet everybody that I know in big organizations and stuff, it is amazing the degree of drug abuse and alcoholism that is in their household.
Yeah.
It is after, I sit there and I go, man, I was through with this stuff when I was 19.
Yeah.
You guys are 50. When are you going to grow up?
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, their relationships are falling apart. The kids aren't ever home. Who's doing what? Who's got a daughter in the house? Is pregnant for the second time? You know, and so like, you know, okay, so here we are. Now we got, you know, more single mothers. That's what we need. 80% of the women in America are single mothers. It's like, that's not the way you bring up kids. And then they wonder why things are Guyano-Squatsy. So, it's all about responsibility, I think. And it's not that hard. It's only hard the first 21 days.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but after 21 days, it's easy. So every 21 days, you change something else in your life.
Well, it takes that long to create a new habit, my wife was saying the other day. It takes about 27 days or 21 days to create a new habit.
Mm-hmm. Just like I think the 7th to the 9th day are the worst.
Yeah. You're really in withdrawal then.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I went once and tried to withdraw from drinking too much coffee because I realized I was drinking coffee like water and I wasn't doing anything anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it was okay, but then, you know, I hit the 7th and 9th day, I started to get headaches and I was, you know.
Oh wow.
I mean, you didn't disagree with me.
I was in grad school, they taught us that caffeine is the most addictive substance on the planet. It's in everything.
Well, I know this much. I know that if you're taking natural herbs and things to heal, caffeine totally instantly neutralizes them.
Huh.
So you're wasting your time. It works quicker than alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, but you got a lot of cup of coffee. It's like,
yeah.
You know, that's when you guys start drinking green tea.
Yep.
Now, the thing about green tea is that, you know, it doesn't give you the jolt that coffee does, but when you stop looking for the jolt, you'll find that you can go for a longer period of time without the jitters.
Well, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, for very long periods of time.
It's a natural tonic rather than a
Well, what is in the green tea? It's the caffeine. And there's actually more caffeine in green tea than there is in coffee.
Yeah, but it's with the...
So I think it's stuff that they're spraying the coffee with.
Could be. Could be. Because coca, I mean, look at, you know, coca, saw the old story about Atahualpa and Pizarro. Coca leaf used to be a tonic for the Indian and help him work and everything, and but he cursed the white men that the coca would be a curse to them, and you know, they